Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
You know, I think that cattle markets are going to continue to be a pretty high priority issue here this week.
Ethan Lane is Vice President of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Supply chain, transportation issues and challenges, labor shortages, driver shortages, shipping container shortages. I mean, that has been such a big topic of conversation. Packing capacity, some of the opportunities with this new pot of money coming out of USDA to add some new regional options and smaller options for producers. And then climate and sustainability, I think, are going to continue to be top line items as cattle producers really shift their mindset from being afraid of that conversation to recognizing what a positive story they have to tell in that space, and the fact that we have an administration that seems to be pretty receptive to that and wanting to take advantage of that and kind of go on offense and hit the gas.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We've been advocating for it with USDA, so we're pleased to see them echoing a lot of what we've asked for in the comment period that they opened up this summer, looking for those opportunities to add options for producers to market their cattle, maybe some closer to home, maybe some different kinds of processing capacity that meets the needs of what producers are producing in different parts of the country.
That's Ethan Lane, Vice President, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. At the 2022 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show in Houston.
Those high capacity options are really helpful as well. We need to move, 660,000 head a week through the system one way or another. But offering more opportunities for producers to capture more of the beef dollar, more leverage, finding those local markets, finding those niche markets. What a great opportunity with some of this money to add some options there.
So during the Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show, the Executive Committee of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association approved the organization's policy priorities for this year, with an emphasis on strengthening the economic, environmental, and social sustainability of the cattle industry. Specifically, the policy priorities include improving market leverage and opportunities through increased access to market data and risk management tools for producers. Second, securing the future of the beef industry by protecting crucial tax provisions, limiting regulatory burdens on farms and ranches, and leveling the playing field for producers. Third is boosting the resiliency of the beef supply chain by addressing labor shortages, improving processing capacity, expanding technology, and strengthening transportation. And finally, achieving key cattle industry priorities in the 2023 Farm Bill. Well, cotton futures back in November hit $1.20 a pound, and that was the highest close in over a decade. Then, just a few days after that, news of the variant of COVID hit. That sent commodity markets into retreat, and cotton futures fell 10 to 15 cents. But still, prices held above the longer-term upward trend, which began in April of 2020. Despite the nearly two-year bull market, though, there seems to be a growing threat of downside risk. That's according to Rob Fox with CoBank, who writes in their quarterly report that global cotton use is driven by consumer spending, which depends on global economic growth. And unlike food and fuel, apparel and other textiles, largely discretionary purchases. So the rapid emergence and spread of Omicron in just a few weeks shattered the public perception that the pandemic was approaching an endpoint. He says it may take many more months or even years for consumers to regain their confidence, and says the fundamental global supply and demand situation doesn't necessarily suggest that the high current price levels are warranted. He says global stocks, including China, appear to be ample. But when looking at the 2021-2022 global ending stocks-to-use ratio, that would be 40%, which is essentially unchanged year over year. And other than the pandemic shock 2019-2020 season, ratio really hasn't been higher in the previous 20 years. So including China, stocks-to-use ratio on par with the previous 6 years, where farm-level prices hovered in the 60 to 70 cent range. Still, even new crop prices today are above a dollar. It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight. Simple. Sold.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This hearing of the Subcommittee on Conservation and Forestry, entitled A 2022 Review of Farm Bill Conservation Programs, will come to order.
Representative Abigail Spanberger from Virginia is chairwoman of the Subcommittee on Conservation in the House Ag Committee.
We are here today to examine how America's voluntary conservation programs are working for producers, how investments in USDA's conservation programs are addressing our resource needs, and how these programs can be utilized to help address the climate crisis. This hearing presents an opportunity for us to discuss what is working and what can work better as we look ahead to the 2023 Farm Bill. I would like to welcome both Chief Cosby and Administrator Ducheneau to the subcommittee today. I know subcommittee members on both sides of the aisle are looking forward to hearing your updates as to how the programs that you oversee are working for farmers, ranchers, and foresters across the nation. Your agencies have been hard at work, and Administrator Ducheneau, I would like to first mention the work you are doing to get folks enrolled in CREP, in CRP through a new sign-up and to expand CREP by enabling negotiations of matching funds. And Chief Crosby, I know that January has been a big month for NRCS, and I commend all that you are doing to expand access to conservation across the country. Your announcement of 118 new equity conservation cooperative agreements shows a commitment to bringing the benefits of conservation to historically underserved communities.
And addresses climate smart plans.
In addition, I'm especially excited about the work that NRCS is doing to expand available resources for farmers embracing climate smart agriculture. Farmers are the original conservationists, and there is so much we can learn from our growers and producers on how to combat the climate crisis. That's why I'm proud to be the sponsor of the Bipartisan Growing Climate Solutions Act. Our legislation is supported by nearly every major American farm group, as well as many major environmental groups and Fortune 500 companies, not to mention many growers and foresters across Virginia's 7th District. In a time when bipartisanship is hard-earned, this bill stands as a testament to how we can work together for our constituents, if only we are willing to come to the table in good faith and set partisanship aside. This legislation passed the Senate last year on a vote of 92-8, and it's long past time for the House to follow suit and do right by our farmers, rural America, and our planet. Today, I'm thrilled that the USDA is already taking bold steps to bring farmers to the table on climate-smart agriculture. NRCS's recent announcement that EQIP conservation incentive contracts will be available nationwide and that the USDA will be launching a new streamlined cover crop program demonstrates the agency's commitment to making it easier for farmers to work to address climate concerns while benefiting their bottom lines. In addition to your update to CSP that allows producers to immediately re-enroll the following year, it's a great step towards making it easier for producers to participate. Finally, the $225 million investment in RCPP will enable more investments that leverage partner dollars and participation. All of these programs deliver on-the-ground resources that help us mitigate and adapt to climate change and benefit our producers.
And the chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service, Terry Cosby, testifying before the committee.
As we deliver on our conservation programs, we're expanding to further and target our investments for climate smart agriculture and forestry. This includes announcements within EQIP, CSP, and RCPP, as well as an update list of climate smart conservation activities. That being said, our programs remain oversubscribed with demand for climate smart practices and programs well exceeding available funding. The Build Back Better Act will make a historic investment in our volunteer conservation program that support farmers, ranchers, and forest land owners in addressing the climate.
That subcommittee hearing on Wednesday. It's Agriculture Today.
My name is Manuel Macias. My dream was to become a farmer like my grandfather and my dad. It was hard back then. I wanted so bad to buy some land, but no bank will go with me until I went to Capital Farm Credit. And as soon as I walked in, I felt the friendliness in it. It's a partnership. It's good to do business with a company that looks out and gives you back whatever you put in. Capital Farm Credit, together we're better.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
The choices that you have available to you are price loss coverage, PLC, which pays when the market year average is below a effective reference price. There's ARC County. ARC County makes payments when county revenue is below 0.86 of a county guarantee. And ARC IC is a farm level policy. So if you enroll an FSA farm in ARC IC, all crops are lumped together in the guarantee, and all FSA farms that are enrolled in ARC IC are treated as one farm.
Dr. Gary Schnitke, University of Illinois ag economist, on this ARC PLC decision.
And we would suggest taking that if you, for a limited number of FSA farms, again, where you have high-risk farmland. PLC will make payments when the market year average price is below the reference price. Effective reference price for corn is $3.70, $8.40 for soybeans, and $5.50 for wheat. We are not expecting prices to be that low for the 2022 crop year. And if they're that low, a lot of adverse things are going on.
So those are the choices, but how do we make the decision?
We have two tools available to aid in making that decision. One of those is the 2018 Farm Bill What If tool. We've put up the 2022 version of that, and that's a fast Microsoft Excel spreadsheet that you can download from the website. The other one is the Gardner Program Payment Calculator, which will give the probabilities of ARC and PLC for alternatives. That is a web-based tool.
But it's a small probability for any payment.
We're going to turn first to corn here and look at what corn looks like. And to do that, we have the ARC PLC Payment Calculator, which is a fast Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. And we're going to look at a scenario for corn in Champaign County, Illinois, which happens to be a non-irrigated variety. On the Gardner Program Calculator, we have the probability of making payments for PLC in ARC County for the 2022 year. We have a 3% chance of a PLC payment, 1% chance of ARC County payment, very low probabilities. If anything, we lean towards PLC because it has a larger chance of payment. SCO is available under PLC. And also, the payments under PLC are not capped. We can get above the 10% limit that exists under our county. PLC will make payments when prices are below $8.40, and that's a very unlikely situation to occur. If we're looking at the Gardner payment calculator for this case, we see very low probabilities of payment, and we would probably lean either way here. It's pretty much your choice. If you want to take SCO, then we might lean towards PLC. Turning to wheat, the payment likelihood of on wheat is very low. If we go to 2022 on the Gardner payment calculator, we see a 9% chance of payment under PLC, 4% chance under ARC County. Again, very low possibilities. And we would lean towards PLC because you could take SCO. PLC doesn't have a limit on its total payments, and it does have a slightly higher chance of making payments in 2022.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
AquaYield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burndown.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burndown herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think it's one of those things that we tend to hyper-focus on our own backyard, right, and the beef industry supply chain, and we've been helped out in that by the White House talking about it constantly in the Hill and everybody else. But, you know, it's every part of the economy. It's every hotel you stay in. We're staying in a hotel right now that has those challenges. The restaurant you ate in last night, the airline that you took to get here, it is every segment of the U.S. economy that's struggling with that right now in a way that I don't think we contemplated 2 years ago when we got into this pandemic.
Ethan Lane is Vice President of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
You know, where we go on that, how we finally kind of get our head above water again and start to stabilize some of this is anybody's guess. I think it's going to be really important that industries like ours continue to communicate these specific needs that we have in that conversation, right? We can't just, you know, pump our fist at the sky and say, you know, fix our issues. We have to communicate very clearly where we're seeing challenges, where the choke points are. We say this a lot, but it's true. We have the most complex commodity market set in the world in the U.S. cattle and beef industry. And you know, every different segment is a little bit different. And that domino effect we've watched play out in real time over the last couple of years. You know, the packing sector sneezes and cattle producers catch a cold. And so looking at how we alleviate some of those things moving forward, looking at how we improve the system so that that's not the case anymore, some of it's out of our hands. Some of it's just, you know, market cycles and supply and demand. And there's not a whole lot we can do about that. The government can't fix that, right? It goes back to the Ronald Reagan quote, you know, we're from the government, we're here to help. I mean, there's only so much they can do on some of those things. But, you know, paying attention to where they can help, and maybe also more importantly, not creating unforced errors, right? Let's not create new obstacles in everybody's way as we move through that process, whether it's, you know, mandates that are making it challenging for federal workers to get their work done, or, you know, difficulties in navigating transportation between states, truck weight imbalances. You know, ELD has been a bright spot because they've continued to grant us emergency declarations that have given us needed flexibility to get cattle moved around the country. That's been invaluable. Let's learn from that, right? The government can be helpful there in clearing headroom so that we can get our work done and get people fed.
Speaking at the 2022 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show in Houston, looking towards November, Lane says.
I think that congressional election years like this, midterm election years, are pretty predictable. You know, at a certain point, these guys are going to turn their focus to their elections. And you know, that does mean sort of a shortened window for getting real legislative work done on the Hill. It also, unfortunately, and I mean, I count a lot of members of Congress as friends, and so I'm not insulting them or hurling mud, but it also expands the opportunities for grandstanding, which honestly right now isn't real helpful. I mean, we've had a couple years of sort of nothing but grandstanding. What we need is a pretty sober approach to some of these issues and a recognition that there's no silver bullet to any of the challenges that we're facing. And there's no three producers in this building that all see those issues the same way. You know, that's the biggest value proposition of NCBA, is taking those disparate opinions and assembling them into a policy that we can communicate on behalf of the industry that gives policymakers a path forward.
Obviously, there's a lot of focus on challenges, but he says there are opportunities.
Surging demand for our product. We're producing higher quality beef in the United States than anyone has ever seen. And we're doing it with a lower environmental footprint than anyone has ever seen. And the $10 billion in exports that we did last year and the high demand for our product speaks to that. What an amazing opportunity. We need to make sure that we fix those challenges that ensure that our producers are getting paid for creating that high value. You know, you don't create value in a steer at the packing plant. You create it at the ranch level. So fixing those challenges is central. But let's not lose sight of the fact that, boy, we have some strong opportunities right now, and the public loves what we produce.
It's Agriculture Today.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement semi-annual sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It's hard to believe it's already been just over 3 years since the 2018 Farm Bill.
Representative G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, he's the ranking member on the House Ag Committee, at a subcommittee hearing on conservation Wednesday.
And then when the bill was signed into law. Today begins the process of reviewing the implementation of the Farm Bill, allowing members the opportunity to hear how program changes are working and ensuring these changes are being administered as Congress intended. And this is an immensely important responsibility of this committee. Oversight and review of each title must be completed before we can even begin to contemplate the next Farm Bill reauthorization. As a former chairman of the subcommittee, I'm excited to kick off this process by reviewing conservation programs. I've long appreciated great benefits that locally led, incentive-based voluntary conservation provides for both the environment, agriculture producers, the economy, as an effective tool for delisting endangered species, and climate. All great outcomes as a result of these great conservation programs that we've codified over the years. Now, during the writings of the 2014 Farm Bill, when I chaired the subcommittee, there was a concerted effort to strengthen, simplify, and streamline our conservation programs. And since then, including the 2018 Farm Bill, this committee provided further reforms to increase the financial support and improve the delivery of these programs to producers.
But he does say he has concerns.
I have to say that it must remain the conservation title and not be repurposed as the climate title. You know, I think sequestering greenhouse gases is an obvious outcome of our conservation programs. That's why American farmers, ranchers, and foresters are climate heroes. They really lead the way in the world on the issue of climate and sequestering over 6.1 gigatons of carbon annually, far more than what's admitted in that vast land space of what is considered all under the title of natural land solutions. But it must be the conservation title. While a number of conservation programs can clearly provide climate benefits, as I've discussed, the broad emphasis of Title II and its programs must remain on the proven conservation practices that will directly benefit the producer and support the sustainability of American agriculture. And with that in mind, I remain concerned over a rush to implement some of the climate-related proposals through Farm Bill programs or administratively by USDA before being fully vetted by this committee. The agriculture portion of the Build Back Better is just one example of pursuing questionable policies with significant funding through the Agriculture Committee without any vetting to any degree or considering long-term impacts of such action. Our conservation programs are critical for the sustainability of our farms and ranches, and as such, long-term changes should be made through thoughtful consideration by this committee.
Zach Ducheneau is the administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency. He talks about increasing buy-in for CRP.
Whatever the Congress decides to do, we will work our best to implement it. But we've made some changes to soil rental rates that have really helped drive enrollment up. We made an increase in the grassland CRP, which significantly drove interest up. And it's important to remember that every additional acre we enroll in CRP is another choice that a producer has to be an economic player in the global climate change mitigation effort.
It's Agriculture Today. If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Those of you that are familiar with our Ag Manager website, I encourage you to go there. You can download the report and a host of other related information that we've talked about in the past. But to set the stage, the last 6 months of 2021, per that Meat Demand Monitor project, demand was very strong.
Dr. Glenn Tonzer is a Kansas State livestock economist talking about a meat demand monitor that he puts together each month.
So specifically beef demand at the retail, you know, buying grocery store take home, as well as through your restaurant channel away from home, was notably stronger second half of 21 than it was the first half, and notably stronger than it was at the beginning of the pandemic. I highlight that because this whole project started February 2020, so that's when my comparisons could start. When we hone in on January of this year, so our first month here in 2022, ribeye steak demand was up, both through the grocery store and restaurant channels, while ground beef was down when we compared to December, but both are up notably compared to a year ago. You know, my latest estimates, and that's why I start with this story, is that is my most recent information to pull from, suggests that maybe there was a pause on beef demand compared to what we had in December, but not a big one, and still notably higher than a year earlier. I would say beef demand overall is fairly robust domestically. I'm going to talk exports here in a moment, but that is definitely a part of what's going on, is when we have steady, if not strong, beef demand coupled with slowly declining available supplies, which reflects the herd, and we're going to talk about the cattle inventory report in a second, then we shouldn't be surprised when we see higher beef prices facing consumers. And sure enough, that's what we're seeing and talking about in the media a lot.
Now, we already know there's strong export demand, but what about domestic demand? Tonzer says
the most recent that's available from USDA is more lagged, and it's just because there's a lag in getting the data, you know, processed, and it would be for the month of November. So first for domestic, November 2021, beef demand was down 2% compared to October, but it was up 19% from November of 2020. And actually, every month between August and November of 2021 was higher than the same month in 2020. So again, we ended, that's consistent with my Meat Demand Monitor comments, we ended 2021 in a very good footing, domestic demand-wise. But frankly, that understates the overall demand story because export demand was even stronger. Mm-hmm. So November of 2021, export demand was up 10% compared to October and a full 25% stronger than November of 2020. Those are large percentage changes for an industry this big. Underneath that is, I maintain this index and where that information, those quotes are coming from, demand was 167% stronger in November of 2021 than it was my base period, which is January of 2010. Month after month growth, there's been some hiccups, of course, but there's been notable export demand growth since that initial month of January 2010. To drive it home, November was only the second month, and they both occurred in 2021, where beef sales abroad, so U.S. beef being sent to somewhere outside of our 50 states, exceeded $1 billion. And to drive it home even more, the USMEF, United States Meat Export Federation, which focuses on beef and pork exports, that's their main wheelhouse, their estimates suggest about 22% of the sales value for steers and heifers in the U.S. in 2021 could be tied back to exports. And where's that number coming from? They estimate a little over, I think it's 402 specifically, but over $400 per head can be tied to export value. Mm-hmm. When you compare that to the base value of an animal, that's where Glenn comes up with the 22%. The 22% well exceeds the volume represented by exports, and that's another example of economics and markets at work. Those products are fine in places they're most valuable. I usually use the example of tongs. Right? Tongs or household will never pay as much as the average household in Japan for a tong. People remember that silly comment, but letting trade work and get products where they're most valuable is core to that comment about adding value to the steer or heifer. And that played out in spades very well for the beef industry in 2021.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer. It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low-input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit Equinom.com.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from Americut. NextGen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bollgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local NextGen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. NextGen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Lawmakers, policy people are already starting discussions prepping for the 2023 Farm Bill. One phrase we're likely to hear quite a lot, especially from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, is this.
Extraction economy.
Extraction economy. Definition?
We take things from the land and off the land, and unfortunately, rather than converting them and value-adding them in and close to the rural areas where the natural resource is, they are transported long distances where they are value-added in some other location where opportunities and jobs are created elsewhere.
Vilsack told a House Ag Committee hearing he wants to replace that extraction economy with
a circular economy.
Circular economy.
In which the wealth is created and stays in rural areas.
So he's pushing for policies and programs to encourage more local food processing and bio-based product manufacturing, for example, and he said he hopes to work with lawmakers
to take a look at how we might be able to do a better job of maintaining and creating wealth in rural communities.
Replacing the extraction economy with a circular one. Gary Crawford, Washington.